Unfortunately, because I'm not licensed, and it's because the people who are licensing us are NPOs.
Okay.
There's no central body. Okay. That's like he's a psychologist.
Yeah.
Like THO is an NPO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no central one.
Mm-hmm.
You can start your own and then draft them a legal document.
So it has no authority over anything.
It has no authority.
The conversations that I had with Mphosa Diki and Gogo Langa in the previous episode gave me a lot to think about when it comes to the topic of spirituality in the workplace. And it helped me to understand that even though the corporate world is portrayed as a kind of a neutral environment when it comes to matters relating to cultural and spiritual beliefs, this neutrality itself is based on Western norms of what is deemed to be appropriate practices and what is not. The way in which African spiritual beliefs manifest does create tension in many working environment, and it seems that companies and executives and HR departments kind of don't really know what to do when it comes to such situations. But this topic is still a very broad one in terms of individual experiences, and I was curious as to how others navigated their encounters with spirit and spirituality, as well as the complexities of spiritual purpose. So I spoke to Koko Jebu, who spent years in the corporate space and has since transitioned from being an HR practitioner to now being a full-time Gobela.
Maybe let's start with your journey. Like, when you started realizing, or when your calling emerged, you were still working in corporate.
You know, when my calling emerged, I got fired from work.
Yeah.
So it's almost like I got lucky now, like in hindsight, 10 years later, that I got sick, and then like things just weren't going right with my team at the time.
Mm.
And I just... although I know it's unfair labor practice, my qualification is in HR, I knew the acts, and I knew the, you know, what I needed to do, but it was just difficult. I was in a state of like almost being locked in, you know, like where you trust your mind to help you solve a problem. It felt like my mind would go blank, you know. So I lost the job before
Was it poor performance that started happening, or was it just inexplicable things that were happening?
So I got held hostage in the office. It was a very strange... So what happened is that a colleague at the time, so it was HR is paper based. So a colleague was using papers, and Capitec was opening, like, oh, it wasn't opening, but it was like becoming popular. But they didn't have robust systems, security systems. So he had, maybe I shouldn't be including this, but he had someone who worked at Capitec taking the papers. So if you get fired from, I was in retail,
okay,
at the head office. So in retail, you get fired for stealing like tennis biscuits or a Sunlight bar, you'll get fired. It's theft.
Yeah.
It contributes to shrinkage. So what would happen is that he wouldn't educate the people as an HR business partner. Ukuthi, even if you're stealing Sunlight and you've worked with us for like something crazy like 35 years, it doesn't mean which you shouldn't claim your provident fund. So he was claiming their provident fund.
Okay.
Mina, unknowingly, I was like, this is too much paper. Mm-hmm. If I lose one paper, then a person loses, doesn't get their pension fund or their salary gets delayed. Mm-hmm. It's one paper causes too many problems. And I had a pilot project in which some things were automated,
okay,
you know, with the IT department. So we sat down and we came up with this thing, and then it caught out that he was stealing to the tune of 2 million per year. So just, you know, automating, some things wouldn't check, or then you know, somehow we caught that it's always the same signature in these Capitec documents. Then he hired people get to kill me because he thought I had been watching him for months. And I hadn't. I was just frustrated with using so much paper. And sometimes you have a whole paper, but it's one signature that you're looking for, you know, or just a small part of the paper. So like what we can automate, let's automate it. So things started going crazy from there, you know. So he would try and use my access card to prove certain things, you know. But the day I got held hostage was so crazy that CCTV that was facing my office at the time wasn't working for that day. Every colleague that was on the floor in the department was traveling to the stores on that day. So crazy things like that. That's me now. That's how I left corporate. But now that I'm working with Amadlozi for all these years now, I understand the person that I was then wouldn't have left under different circumstances. So I was lucky in that way.
So you had to be forced out.
I had to be forced out, and I had to be forced out in that way, you know, because the guy who helped
like
me,
like, it couldn't be gentle.
It couldn't be. It couldn't have been. You know how they say, like, I think it was Oprah who said, sometimes your destiny will throw a stick at you or a pebble, and then will throw a brick, and then will throw a rock, and then a wall will fall on you. Now, if you throw a pebble, then I become like the frog in boiling water. If I got into cold water and it's getting warm,
you get used to it.
And because of my stubbornness, I won't get out of the water because I'm like, I know the water when it's cool. I'll wait until it's cooled down. Gandhi, I'm boiling to death. So it needed to be that way for me. Otherwise, I wouldn't have.
But did you know at the time that you had a calling at the time? Were you aware?
People would tell me that I had a calling. But I remember, like, when I was going to finish my degree, the last 6 months of my degree, I fainted every day. Something just would tell me, light 7 white candles. I bought a candlestick that can hold 7 white candles, and I'd pray on them, and I'd faint before I could put them out or I could finish praying. I don't know what I thought that was, you know?
You didn't connect the fainting and the spirit that...
No, I didn't connect them. I just knew that, you know what, one day I might burn down this whole, like, flat block of flats if I'm not careful. But I had a bit of a compulsion, you know? And then when I started back to first year, when I left for varsity, I was gone for 6 months and I got so sick. I needed like blood transfusions. It was just crazy. And doctors couldn't really explain it. They could just tell Guti, like, I had deficiencies in my body. Came back home, my dad was like, okay, we have to tell Amadlozi Guti you're away. We didn't announce Gatle Guti Ahamba. We have to let them know because we know you have a calling. He said that and I remembered it. But the day Niti, I have a calling, I might need to answer it. Everyone was surprised, you know. But anyway, they slaughtered the goat and I was fine.
Okay. So your family was familiar with?
They were familiar with things that were happening with me, but they never called it what it was.
Okay.
They never said, you have a calling. We don't know what it is because ekhaya, there's this tunya and then there's isa ubungoma, you know, ubungoma, which people will try and convert into is tunya or whatever.
So then into zomoya are not new to you in your family?
No, they're not. Izinto zomoya, izinto zamaphupho. Ekhaya, like the languages, I dreamt this. Sometimes you would not know if you're not from my family. But when they say, how yazi, I bumped into you, means I saw you in my dreams. Or I saw you, you know, it means that I dreamt of you. We know how you say it, Uguti, you dreamt of it. Like, it's such a common language in my family, and it's always been that dreams are part of our everyday language.
So after then you left work, what were you thinking needs to be the next thing? Had you then connected what was happening after you left?
I was very slow to connect it with funneling twice, you know. But I remember I saw a GP. I thought it means that I must be an entrepreneur. I saw a GP and I was very sick. And he said to me, I don't think you're following the path that's meant for you. And I want you to know that the path that's meant for you is not decided by you. You can fall in line, but this path is not decided by you. So whether you decide to follow this path or you find out what the path is, but I'd advise you not to get another job until you understand what your path is. So then I started making the connections, because now I have a daughter and we're losing medical aid, you know. I've lost the income. So I have to find out what is really this thing, if it's going to cause so much chaos in my life.
And then when did you then start embarking on this consciously? When did you say, like, okay, now I actually have to go near twice?
About 3 years after leaving corporate.
Okay.
And Nakona, what made me, like, get on the, like, sort of what made it click and what gave me the courage for the first step was observing Ramadan. Like, a friend was like,
really?
Yeah. My friend was like, let's fast for the month. And I have a Muslim colleague, and these are the guidelines from the colleague. It's a dry fast. We eat after sunset. I'll tell you what sunset is every day. We wait for the elders to sight
for
the
call,
moon.
Yes.
So, and this is what you eat for the constipation. Try to have dates before eating. So something that... So fasting under very strict... like protocol helped it click for me,
because it's a kind of a clearing out. There's
it's a kind of a detox, a clearing out. It's a kind of a respect for hierarchy. Like, the elders have to say, the elders have to do, and the moon has to be a certain way, and this, you know. So you have to, when the sun on this day sets at this time, it doesn't set at the same time the next day. So for a person who's into logic like me, that made sense, you know. So at the end of that Ramadan, then I had very clear dreams.
In retrospect now, looking back at that particular process, do you see it as something that was something you were meant to do, like as part of your ubungoma in preparation, even though you were observing a Muslim rite? Do you connect the two now, or was it just, or are they separate?
I try to separate them because I still observe Ramadan.
Okay.
And I don't fast for breakthroughs.
Okay.
You know, I don't fast for, like, financial breakthroughs. I don't fast for, I'm in this battle, I'm trying to win it. Yeah,
to solve problems.
Yes. What I could find, I feel like the dreams came from myself, you know, the connecting with the guide that gave me the dreams came from within. Like, it's breakthroughs within myself.
Okay.
You know, the crazy things, like this Ramadan, I'm being asked, why do you overextend yourself? This is where it comes from, you know. So it does help me, I feel, become a better healer, but most of all, a better gobela. And then a better mother, you know, to come face to face with myself like that. But not like my whole self. I don't think that's possible. I'd probably spend my whole lifetime doing that. But just finding things in me that are from me, or things in me that are from my bloodline, like the women in my family, don't feel heard, and finding what the root of that thing is, you know. So when a person doesn't feel heard, what do? They make noise, you know. So then where you're just causing, like, chaos around you, because you feel like in the calm you're not heard. There was a Ramadan that I spent doing that. So I try not to practice that month, okay, so of separating them, but I do come out like better in my everyday life.
And then where did this leave you with your, and by this I mean then having to leave corporate and finding that kumele uyothwasa, were you still hoping to go back to work? Formal employment?
I was hoping to do entrepreneurship. I wasn't looking forward to corporate. It was too traumatic to be held hostage and almost get killed. But I really was hoping to do entrepreneurship and ntwaselukubeka izinto zami, and then maybe once in a while ngizobizwa kwemigidi ngihambe ngiyogida ngikhwazi idlozi, then come back and I'm over it, you know. I was hoping ukuthi that would be my life. And I did do business just after Twasa, you know. But then Indumba took over, but it affected how I do that, the business.
And then you went through your Twasa when and you became Isangoma. And then when did the part of becoming a Gobela then happen? Was it something you knew was going to happen, or is it something that you grew into?
It fell into my path. Although there are people who've come into my practice bezothwasa, and they've seen the totems, you know, there are certain totems that people see my bezothwasa gimi, you know. One of them is older than me in age, and she came across that totem when she was 8 years old. Eight years before I was born. She like came face to face with it. And over in her life, she was told, you're waiting for the person who's okthwasisa. You're waiting for the person who's okthwasisa. Kanti's because I'm younger than her, you know. So people were privy to this outside of me. But mangthwasa, and even during my time in Pehlweni, I never dreamt of amathwasa. I never saw amathwasa. It was very strange when people would come into my practice and trance. I'd always think maybe they need to go to other people, but then it would result in them coming in, you know. I think each twasa has been a surprise, because it's never something amadlozwam said, you know, you are fame, but before ungene Pehlweni, ngimpanding twase kuyo. But azange kuphume ukuthi ngizothwasisa. Instead they said, oh, no moya as well, don't forget to moya, and other things that are still, that still resonate, but never amathwasa.
How is the prevalence of people who work in corporate who come to you for intwaso? Does it happen a lot?
It happens a lot, and unfortunately, as my practice grows, I'm finding that, because you have to commit it when a person is submitting forms to the employer.
Yes.
You have to commit to 3 to 4 months, and then it becomes unpaid leave.
Yes.
Or then it's, okay, then we have to, you know, replace you with someone else. Mm-hmm. I'm finding that I'm unable to meet those demands.
How so?
You find ukuthi amadlozi womuntu 5 months down the line, there's still no date and us. You know, I wait for the dream, and I'm waiting for it with desperation, meaning I'm chasing it away. You understand? Or the person will then come at the 6 month and be like, you know what, I've been angry at you for 3 months because I might lose my job, but I've had a breakthrough dream that told me why that wasn't the time. You understand? So the more we just release and let them out, close the lid, the more I can't commit. Some people have stayed 8 months, some people have stayed 9 months, some people, this one person is having a homecoming or stayed a year, you know. So I'm finding that more and more, Guti, I have to have the conversation with you, or Guti, you might need to resign, because
I can't imagine how tough is.
Yeah, it's very tough, because people have, one, the economy is bad, people have a map bond, people have cars,
school fees.
They have school fees, they have kids, they have family that's like, okay, we'll take your kid for 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
You're the breadwinner. We'll take your kid and take care of them. Or even university, you know. So they're like, okay, we'll give you a leave of absence. they have more leeway, but you find it at the end of that leave of absence, amadlozako are like, "Hambane hlathini for 3 more months after intwaso before you have a homecoming." You know, I'm finding that the more I practice, the more I learn the hard way to follow amadlozi rather than follow what your boss is saying, or rather what I think should be the right thing, the more I'm finding it difficult ukuthi umuntu uzofika azohlala unyaka.
So I want to backtrack a bit. You said that there's a lot of people who work in corporate who come to you.
Mm-hmm.
What are there similarities in what happens to people who are in corporate who have the calling? Do they go, like, the experiences that show them that they have a calling and that now is time? Is there similarities to those experiences?
There's a similarity in that by the time you answer your calling and you leave your home, your comfortable home, to have like a sleepover at someone else's house for an extended period, your life stops making sense. So that feels like a depression. You know, so you, the things that fulfill you are not fulfilling you. You know, there's a void that no one can help you with. Not the alcohol, not the sex, not the job, not the kids, not your husband or your wife or your business. And you end up feeling a bit depressed, so you're now you're underperforming at work. You know, you get to a phase in that depression of not being able to differentiate on whether they dreamt their work day or it really happened.
Yeah.
Or okay. At work, and did I really go to the river or did I dream it? You know, it gets intense where you are detached from your life.
Okay.
You know, so they're detached and really they are getting reviews, bad reviews. And I think that's then people come to the point of, okay, I can't lose this job. I can't be performance managed out. Maybe then I should do this thing. You know, I should answer my calling.
And then there's the official part, because you mentioned that they have to submit forms. How officially, how does the process work when a person has a calling and has to go ayothwasa? What is that process? What is the process that people have to go through for that?
Firstly, is to notify HR and your line manager that I'm having these problems. I am unwell, even though it's not something a psychiatrist and a psychologist can help me with.
Yes, because what does it fall under?
Yeah.
Does it fall under mental health?
Sometimes it's not mental health, you know, like it doesn't fall under anything. It really falls under dis-ease. You know, I'm not at ease. So I'm unwell. You know, it falls under that, because I have to write a very long email like, this person, I miss Angoma, first of all, and this person is unwell.
And also, you have to send an email.
I have to send the letter. Okay. That, and you'll be coming to be, you know, I'll be taking care of you. I'll be helping you with this dis-ease, you know, but it needs for me to watch over you for 24/7, so you can't be at work, you know. In fact, I don't want to start like an outrageous angoma. Some people bathwasa basebenza akufani.
Yes.
But I found that the people who have to come to me have to be under my watch for 24/7. So my life stops, their life stops. So it doesn't fall under anything, because a psychiatrist can get you extended leave.
Okay.
They have the DSM 5 or 4, you know. Yes. They have something that's legal where they say you meet the thing, the depression.
Yes.
And anxiety disorder.
Yes.
And maybe this.
Yes.
But I don't have that.
So then how do they recognize your email? Through what authority are they recognizing what you're saying?
And unfortunately, because I'm not licensed, and it's because the people who are licensing us are NPOs.
Okay.
There's no central body that's like is a
like THO.
Like THO is an NPO. You know, there's no central one. You can start your own and then draft them a legal documents.
So it has no authority over anything.
It has no authority. THO can help you in court. You know, it has no authority. It's an NPO.
Yes.
You know, even the Traditional Affairs Department doesn't really do much on Izangoma. I think they still need to sit down and draft. So I'm not licensed because I'm not going to be licensed by an NPO, you know.
That's not recognized.
That's not recognized. You know, maybe you can be popular or whatever. Also, there are some politics that I don't agree with in some of these NPOs. There are things that I don't, you know, that I just don't agree with, you know, and things that I don't want to implement in my practice, you know, in these organizations.
Okay.
That they will ask, your employer will ask for a letter or licensing. Then I have to say, listen, there's actually no like central body. Like psychologists have the, and doctors have HPCSA.
Yes.
Traditional doctors actually don't have that.
Okay.
You know, it's worked with some employers. It hasn't worked with certain
employers. I was actually going to ask, like, how has the reception been to your input in those processes?
With certain employers, it's worked. With certain employers, it hasn't worked. And it comes to really having a human conversation with your manager. And I know this is reckless because of the economic situation, you know. I know this is reckless because at the end of the day, you are a full human being. You can be Sangoma, but you still want to build your career post this process. But unfortunately, like, it comes down to that, you know. So you find with the, you might need to let go of this job, you know. And I can't give you a false light and say, Twasa, give it your all, kuzoba right in 3 months. I can't guarantee that. You know, how can I guarantee that, Nami, when I'm saying my life has never looked the same as it was before Twasa? You know, even if I wanted to, it will never look the same. So how do I promise you that?
And I suppose that is the assumption that, you know, many people will go in with, that things are not going well, and which indicates that mailing your Twasa. And the assumption is that afterwards, then everything reverts back to normal, or life gets better in some way, or even things like, you know, I'll get a better job actually next time. So this,
that's false light, because you'll find ukuthi ya Twasa mnguni nomndawo, and then kuzophakamisa thunywa, you know. Then kuzophakama umsamo, which is a whole different conversation now. Ukuthi fanele umkhulu wakho wakuphi kuphi washona ebulele umakoti wakhe fanele ugezwe lokho. You find that your path keeps being blocked by that. So sometimes I think of Intwaso as opening that can of worms and having the support to clean it up. So ngizothi things are going to look the same. I'm lying. You know, things might look better than they've ever done. I've seen it. You know, I've seen it in my practice where someone who's a Twasa and then they get a big promotion that changes their life forever. You know, then someone a Twasa and ahlale ekhaya and they figure out to be okay, cool, tinglung sumsamo, and then they get big funding. You know, once in a lifetime things. But sometimes you find that umuntu who's a Twasa doesn't go back to work, but then the family is more cohesive. You know, Segazwana, this has opened up communication in the clan. Things are more cohesive. They've gotten to the bottom of whatever is afflicting them. That has gotten better. So it's so hard to be gobela and say, I'm not going to sign this thing. I'm not licensed. You know, I don't have an organization vouching for me. You know, your employers just have to trust my word. And then you can go back to work and see what that looks like. So it's hard to say, shielo msebenzi, you'll get a better one.
I'm literally trying to imagine how that conversation would happen when someone has come and niyahlola, you know, it becomes very clear that this is the path that the person has to go through. And then you have to talk them through the fact that they might they have to leave their job. Or you know, do you tell them that, you know, like what do you say, like, okay, like, what is then the following conversation after that? Like, what are you saying to them afterwards?
I don't tell you what to finally twase.
Okay.
You know, I can tell you things like, amadlozoko have conversations that they want to have with you.
Okay.
Maybe let's cleanse you or palaza to open up your dreams. And then they'll tell you what to, they have to spell it out for you.
Okay.
And even without the limitations of having a job and leave and whatnot, they have to spell it out for you. And now when you say you've dreamt of me, I need to, their totems. Mm. You have to share things that align with those totems for me to know what you are, my twasa. Yes. You know, and the reason for that is that even without you possibly losing a job, there are very many difficulties. Yes. We can't reduce into us or to just the difficulty of possibly losing your life as it looks.
Yes.
You know, you are dying unto yourself. Every day looks different. Mm-hmm. You understand? Every day has a visceral pain. I remember feeling a pain that I was being skinned alive.
Mm.
I didn't have the threat of losing a job. I wasn't working anyway.
Mm.
You know, I had friends covering in Dwaso.
Mm.
I had some family members, the babies was like in Dwaso.
Mm.
But literally, so all the problems that I could have possibly had were handled.
Mm.
But still, every day, it would feel like I'm being skinned alive or being tortured.
Like physical pain.
Physical pain, like so much emotional and spirit ache that it would feel, it has to manifest physically in order for your, you know, for your being to process it.
Mm.
And I wasn't abused, the Petlin, I won't lie.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't abused. It wasn't the hardest environment. Mm. It was just the difficulty of that environment.
Like it was your particular process.
My particular process, coming face to face with myself, coming face to face with my bloodline, that was difficult. And no one could have helped me out of it. I had all the support, the drums, to process izinto or to just vent and ventilate izinye. I had herbs, bengeza every week. I had all of that support, but no one could help me through that thing, you know? So sometimes the added pressure is that you could lose your job and there's nothing I can do, you know? So by the time you come and you know I'm your gobela, and you've, you know, you don't have to chase me down, but the time you've found me, or by the time you've, you know, you've said, okay, this is the thing, at least you can gain, I have that conversation with you. But listen, this is the trend I've noticed. What's your boss like?
Okay.
Have you had people about Twasile before? You know, what was happening with their leave? Benzinjani. What's your family support looking like? Ekaya, this is what could happen so that ungene was. Mm. And unfortunately, by that time, like you feel like you're being held over a cliff.
Yes.
By amadluzwako. So uzovuma anything anyway.
Mm.
You understand? Because yes, I have this job and it provides certain stability, but I don't even like it. You know? And not which it's a permanent thing, not liking that job. It's such an acute disease that it can feel like it overshadows everything else in your life. It can eclipse everything else.
Sure. You actually said something interesting, that when a person comes to you, can't just have been a dream about you, but they also need to have seen totems, specific totems. It's almost like a verification code, like a two-time authentication.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, well, what we see from the outside is that if you dream about a person, you know, that's that. Which has created its own issues in the era of social media, where you see gobelas all the time.
Yeah, you see my face all the time.
You see their person, you know, and then you dream about them, you know, because even I've had, you know, people tell me that, you know, I dreamt about you and you were taking me through the thing. I'm like, I'm definitely the wrong person.
It might be the podcast that's taking you through
You know what I mean?
The medium, not me.
Yeah, I'm definitely not the person. So, but I also assume that it is not necessarily the case every time.
Mm.
You know, it's not not everyone is going to dream about specific totems. But I think it's something that we should keep in mind, that try to sort of have more clarity than just dreaming of a particular person. There needs to be something a bit more beyond the face of the person or an incident.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you may not know that it's my totem.
Yes.
You know, so it's just to verify for me.
Okay.
You know, like Madlizo could have told you to twasa or bone in or bona in, which are common, a manzi, intaba, you know, ipiga, mahia, and beats. It's common. But then when you start talking about certain totems, then I'm like, okay, you are led to me, you know. And I even know now that amanyama twasa wa maboko bela, you are led to me because you're a grandchild more than a child, you know. Like, it's a verification process. Esizayo, there are things in Christianity that have helped me, you know, as umuntu was raised by mama was born again, where she'd say, test the spirit and test it 3 times, you know. So I test, are you dreaming of me? You know, the first test, okay, fine. Then the second test is maybe zongpupa in the context of spirituality or where spirits are, emanzini, in other places. Then the third test is the totem. So that thing has helped me, but it's also taught namadlozi wami what I recognize as confirmation or validation from them. Because I guess pupa the exact same way, you know, but it's helped namadlozi wami and teach yours with, okay, Mboni said this in this context. Among the 20-something dreams of her, at least let one be like this. Because Nami, I have to teach Amadluzam. Because we live in an environment where people see my face all the time. Yes,
people can be misled.
People can be misled. And you find that Aksile Mpande, or I'm Ile Mpande, but Aksile Kobela, you know. And intenjalo can lead to so many things. And unfortunately, we live in times where there's just too much information about Tobongoma out there, you know, it almost not bastardized, because that's not the intention.
Like almost diluted.
It waters it down. It almost waters it down. And we live in an age where as soon as you become a Kobela, you know which you'll be persecuted. You know which you'll be persecuted. Because why does a layman know about the pepeta? You know, there's just too much out there. And utabantu bamnige words into
and words out of context.
Words out of context. Like we say things like in the PTSD when you just have a memory of a bad incident. You know,
or even depression.
Depression, toxic, you know, anxiety. We use big words, you know, out of context for not small situations, but Ubungoma is having the same problem where people will be like, "Kukobela untwebulile," like, "Yay, do you know what that means?" You know, do you know? Then there's igubu, they are everywhere. Then it's like, "Yeah, ngifike kunesigubu," it means vele yathakatha. You understand? Oh, ngifike vele ngo-3 mawuhleli mawuthi uyavuka sekahleli uyawugade ini. You understand? And one of the oldest methods one of the oldest energies of healing is serpent energy, you know,
inyoga.
And then they'll say, yaw ninyoga, and you're just like interacting with serpent energy. Because
Kundalini is like ancient.
Yeah, it's ancient, man. You know, even in Western medicine, it's recognized. But sometimes there's just serpent energy in a healer's home. I'm like, yeah, maravele has a good being at inyoga la payana. Or you'll just see, because in selokshini, you know, so you just know what ikamalako lingainzega anything, like your name, people can do anything to your name. And unfortunately, we someone to don't respect your name. And naikinda buguti ikamalo muntingomo. We don't live by that anymore. You know, you can say anything wefuna ngovusi, ungasho anything on a manjali, and no tribal council will sit and say, gini in your crawl. Give them a cow, gezikamalak.
For saying that. What we've spoken about, you know, what a person who might be working in corporate and has to go through ipelo or intwaso. What would you say then maybe to HR people as to how should they be dealing with these such situations?
I'd say, first of all, a lot of them say you're setting a precedent. So a lot of the answers that we get back is like, you're setting a precedent. So everyone who just feels tired or burnt out, then they'll say bating oktwasa. More often than not, people will rather not say they have a calling.
Okay.
you know. More often than not, people will not say they have a calling. So it should count for something when someone says to you, I have a calling and I need to be away. You know what I'm saying? And I'd say, look at your Labor Reactions Act, Relations Act. Re-look at the Labor Relations Act. And I probably should be talking to labor lawyers now. But re-look at the acts. You know, re-look at all the acts as a labor relations. And what is the other one? They now escape me. But look at the acts, you know, and there's more illness in a South African context than what the clinicians can diagnose. You know, there's a lot more illness that it just doesn't have the range for our context, you know. Ukuthi ungagula and kuthwe inyawo zakho zip, like you're getting like boils or blisters, kuthwe umlilo amadlozi, you need to be home for 2 weeks and you don't need to answer your calling. There's no calling. It's just umlilo amadlozi, anika phahli ne long time gini, nenze umqombothi and stay for 2 weeks and you'll be fine. You know, the your understanding of the law is not the universal law. You know, you should understand the limitations of that. It shouldn't be stuck to giving family responsibility leave when it's my uncle, you know, because I know that's where the conversations are still, you know, in 2023. If I say I have to go home, even though it's not my father, this uncle is my father. Do you understand? In an African family context is my father. Can the conversation move to what limitations your acts have and how to, you know, to accommodate? Because a lot of them are losing very talented people, very energetic people, very innovative people, because you're working with something that's very narrow for a broad context.
So that's a lot on the legislative side of things. So now, what about office realities? Like when you are getting, for example, when you're getting complaints, you know, that there's a colleague who's complaining, let's say, for example, you know, someone who's Christian and konomuntu othwasayo or going through intwaso, you know, those ones
who go to work
and there's discomfort now. Like, you know, this person is finding working with this other person, you know, uncomfortable. How do HR people then approach those kind of situations?
The same way you approach it when there's a Muslim in the company or department, where during Ramadan, you know, to give them space, you know, not to give them strenuous work, you know, to let them have a prayer room. There are corporates where the Muslims have a prayer room, or the Jewish have a prayer room, or the Jewish can wear the prayer shawl and other things. The same way, really, you're not doing anything new. Just extend it to abantu abathwasayo. And the Muslim, the Christians will also say things like, we're doing a Daniel fast, we're doing a New Year fast, we're doing a this fast, a that fast, and they are catered to. This is not any different, you know. So I don't think it should be quite a lengthy topic on that.
Okay.
You know, like the world caters to people who practice Islam, who practice Judaism, the Christians, you know, the same things. Like when Christians are carrying their Bible into the workplace, no one bats an eyelid. When the Muslim ones like are wearing certain things, you know, and they're carrying the Quran and they're giving us sweets and whatnot during Eid. No one bats an eyelid.
Yeah.
So I think it should get to that point, really.
And then more practical now. Someone has fallen into trance in the boardroom. What should the protocol be around such things?
Safety training. Safety training. The same way, you know how when you get into a company, there's orientation. And sometimes if it's an environment that requires safety training, there's a video showing you certain things, you know. It should be included as part of your orientation pack. It should be included as part of your safety training act.
And by this, you mean dealing with people who fall into trance?
With someone who's in a trance. Like, what do you do? Because as much as Izangoma will say, impanda's funny, or the way we do things is not the same, it's not universal, but there are universal ways.
Basics
that they use to deal with trances. You know, if those people need a quiet room, you know, before, although she's in a corporate environment, because in Pepo she's allowed for your ancestors specifically in your home, there should be a room if they require a room. You understand that, to maybe calm you down. But there are universal ways. And I've seen churches, even as a Ramoya, there are ways with Mutumasera Wiso Moya, they help them. You understand? It should be part of your safety training. You have the resources, you have the budget, you know, it's just do the work.
Tokoza. Let's say you get sick and you go to a sangoma who tells you that udlisiwe. The treatment involves you taking imithi and ispeiti, which will render you bedridden for about 2 days and you can't go to work. But you once read on a Daily Sun poster somewhere along the road that you can now get a sick note from a sangoma. So you ask Gogo to hook you up and she reluctantly agrees by tearing out a page from one of her children's exercise books from school, and she scribbles on the date of your treatment, and you kind of sheepishly ask her not to write down what the diagnosis is. So she puts you down for stress and dizziness. Couple of days later, you get to work and your boss wipes off your grin by throwing that shriveled piece of paper into the bin and minuses the 2 days from the sack of peanuts that you get every month. The topic of sick notes from healers and the one Koko Chepu mentioned around whether or not employers can accept emails or essentially letters from Abokobela as sufficient to allow a person to go through Intwaso is actually a complex situation that doesn't have a well-defined answer. So let me explain to you why. The absence of an employee from work is regulated by the provisions of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. This requires that if a person is absent for more than 2 consecutive days or on more than 2 occasions during an 8-week period, in order for that person to be paid for those days, that person must produce a medical certificate stating that they were unable to come to work if it's related to sickness or injury. Now, the Act requires that this medical certificate must be issued by a medical practitioner who is registered with a professional council established by an Act of Parliament. So the question then is, do healers qualify as medical practitioners under the Act? In 2007, the Traditional Health Practitioners Act was legislated, leading to the establishment of the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council, or the Council for short. According to Boyani Tsehla, who is a lecturer at the Faculty of Law in the Northwest University Mafikeng campus, the Act defines a traditional health practitioner as a person who is registered under this Act in one or more of the categories of traditional practitioner. The categories of traditional health practitioners include diviners, herbalists, traditional birth attendants, and traditional surgeons. The issue that arises is that for a healer to be registered, healers need to basically prove that they can do the things that they're saying that they can do, be it divining, herbalisting, or traditionally surgeoning. And if you have paid any attention to the industry of healers, you will know that there is no healer who feels compelled to prove anything to anyone. So as such, the council is unable to come up with a standardized process of evaluating all the different healing modalities out there in order to say who is and who is not a healer. Another example of the problems a medical certificate and its validity can bring about is the 2013 case involving Kivitz Kroon Country Estate versus Mme Johanna Mueledi. Mme Johanna was dismissed from work because she submitted a certificate from her gobela to finish her intwaso, but the employer questioned the validity
of the certificate issued by the traditional healer. The case started at the Commission of Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration and went to the Labour Court and then the Labour Appeals Court and eventually was finalized in the Supreme Court of Appeal. At the Supreme Court of Appeal, Mme Johanna won the case and she got her job back in this particular instance, but the outcome did not give validity to all medical certificates issued by traditional health practitioners. So, as things stand, legally, an employer can use their discretion whether they want to accept your sick note from ugogo or umkhulu or not to accept it. And each case will have to be treated by its own merits, and in all likelihood, it will probably just go to the CCMA. But there is another side to this issue of sick notes from healers. And you probably think that certification of isangoma is an intervention that came about recently. In reality, though, the certification of healers goes back literally 100 years. Historian Faith Bennett says that in 1920, the government founded the Native Affairs Department to regulate the practices of Indigenous Africans within South Africa. The department soon introduced a certification process. Traditional healers had to apply to the Native Affairs Department to receive a certificate that stated their legitimacy as inyanga, or a sangoma for that matter. The authorization allowed the government to keep record of traditional healers, but the process also gave the department grounds to crack down on unlicensed herbalists. This certification process would also necessarily dictate what was and what was not considered to be legitimate in terms of healing modalities. And you can imagine then that there are many practices that the government did not allow that had to be put to a stop. You have to remember that during the early 1900s to the mid-1900s, it was illegal for black women to be employed in just about any capacity outside of being domestic workers. This means that many black women were largely prohibited from applying for certificates to be recognized as healers. So even before the Witchcraft Act of 1957, many black women were already facing brutality from the state for seemingly practicing without a license. This process then shifted the gender dynamic of Indigenous healers. In delegitimizing women's place within healing, this process constructed a man-made hierarchical system that cast black women as the dark horses of spirituality. And it doesn't take much imagination to picture many men relishing in being placed above women and taking that construct and turning it into some kind of spiritual philosophy and a dogma that saw black women having to hide and bury their gifts, their gods, and their callings, not just from the government in some cases, but also from their own families and from their own husbands. Today we speak of the disproportionately high number of young women who have to go through intwaso, and we often wonder why. But if you put the puzzle pieces together, you can get a picture of the direction that the storm is coming from. Regulation of Indigenous healing is probably not going to be a reality anytime soon, probably not for many, many generations. And certainly not in a way that would actually benefit black people at this moment. The world would need to be a different place for that to happen. As things stand, each person will have to fight their own individual battles within their own companies, whatever that battle may entail. There really is no one coming to save us. But be that as it may, our ancestors are here. They are knocking on boardroom doors, they are breaking through glass ceilings, and they are not asking anyone for permission. My name is Wasum Zinlande. Thank you so very much for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Kwantu. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.